This was a number one hit in 1995. The song is called December. The band is Collective Soul, and I figured that band name would be a good fit for the program, not only for tonight, but for this particular point in the evening's conversation. We're talking with Susie Hansen and Dr. Rudy Shield about the dual soul connection, about how there might be a cosmic connection between us and these visitors. In fact, they gave Susie Hansen some very detailed information about that, how it all fits together. We're going to get into that, talk about some hints they gave her about what is coming in the future for humanity, and then we'll open up the phone lines. A lot to come here in this next hour. Stay with us. Much more here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Susie Hansen, you've described sort of this interaction with these visitors, these beings from somewhere else, and that you had selected you selected this role for yourself, this job for yourself. I hope part of the job is to get the word out about it, and I hope that they had in mind that you'd come on Coast to Coast because you're now being heard all over the world. And I can't imagine you've had a bigger audience than you're having right now. And I would think maybe they had in mind that you'd have somebody like Rudy Shield to help bolster your case. In any case, we're glad to have you here, and I really enjoyed the story, but some of this was kind of dark. I mean, you had conversations with them about the future. I mean, they're preparing you and your children and thousands of other people and their children for something to come. Did they tell you what it is?
In 2010, in February, so 5 years ago, I had memory 1 month apart in February and again in March of being on a craft that night and experiencing certain things which were quite troubling and disturbing. The first event in 2010, February, we were taken to a whole lot of people, like 200, 250 people poured off craft. And we found ourselves in an underground facility where we were taken to a large auditorium-like room with seating going up and platforms, which we all filed up onto. And we were told that we were going to see some images that were going to be quite shocking and that we would be given some information about things to come. For several minutes, we watched images that began very quite slowly appearing on a screen. They were of Earth changes, they were of catastrophes, if you can put it that way. And as they began to flick over on the screen, they got faster and faster until we saw hundreds of images just flashing on the screen, and yet we were able to somehow absorb, had learnt to absorb these images at speed and to be able to register what was happening. It was very shocking. There were people sobbing. There were people finding it very difficult to go through that we were being shown these futuristic events. At the end of this period of time when we were watching this, one of the entities present put out what I'd call a blanket of calm. So telepathically or using his consciousness, he sent out this energy that just calmed everyone down. You were still had the shocking memory of these things in your mind, but it was as if you were now able to view it candidly. You were able to view it analytically and quite calmly, even though the essence of what you saw was pretty unpleasant. We were told that in a short space of time we would be brought back on the craft and we would be asked to meet with groups of humans that were being brought on board, and there was a preparatory stage going on ahead of these earth changes and ahead of these tragedies that would occur on the planet, and that there was going to be instruction and more information, and we would be able to impart this in due course. Now, it's interesting to note that at that time we had a number of things just happen shortly after this particular event, and that was we had the big earthquake in New Zealand in my own country where there was loss of life and destruction of one of our major cities. We had the Japanese tsunami and wars and devastation in quite a number of countries, including the Arab Spring taking place. So it was as if this evidence just seemed to build up right in front of me of what they had said I could see happening. Well, I think we all know that our planet is not in a good state. People have been saying that for years, but as you said before, what do we actually substantially do about it? And their concern is that, there's a question of our very survival if we don't start doing something about it, start pulling ourselves out of it, start pulling ourselves together. But this is a huge undertaking, and I think we're being swamped at the moment with the chaos that is occurring worldwide on every level of society and in so many different countries. And I have seen this escalating since this time that I had this experience and this memory of being on a craft and being shown these things. We have seen an escalation, and scientists say that our weather patterns are getting more and more difficult.
Susie, let me interrupt for a second. Doesn't it seem like, though, that they're preparing us, that they'd like us to change, but they're preparing us in anticipation that we won't?
I think it's hanging in the balance, and I think most of us realize that we're leading our life every day, but in actual fact, we are hanging in the balance. And so after this particular incident, almost exactly a month later, in March 2010, I had another memory of being on a very large craft, like a large town. And all of the humans that I had been with on the first occasion, where we were shown the shocking images, were now asked to lecture to groups of humans. And we were sent off on this craft to large rooms where there were humans in an altered, relaxed state, seated. And the first group that I talked to, we had been provided with what I refer to as a thought seed. So on the first event in February, we'd had put in our minds by the entities present like an outline of something, like an outline of a lecture that we could add to, and we could put some of our own personal experience and our own personal perspectives in to convey it to these groups of people. So on the second event on this large craft, I first lectured to a group of people who were potential leaders in their communities. So there's these preparatory measures taking place whereby people with certain skills or certain attributes, and in particular, I'm going to bring in here the psychic kind of psychic aspect, where people have a leaning towards being able to pick something up out of the ether, if I can put it that way. These people were brought on board craft, and discussion took place in all of these different rooms about these things that were coming up, and what skills were needed, and how they could help their communities. Now, one of the points the Greys raised was that our humanitarian aid groups would not be able to cope with the things that were coming up on our planet. Now, we're already seeing that. We're seeing that more recently with the Ebola outbreak and how difficult that was to bring under control, and I believe it's still not under control. Right. We've got the war in Syria and many other countries. We've now got masses, millions of refugees and migrants. We're becoming almost like a borderless world where people are crossing from one country to another looking for a safe haven.
And soon to come, a war in Iran, probably. Let me interrupt. And soon to come, a war in Iran, probably.
That's right.
Let me interrupt for a second.
They said that aid groups will not be able to cope because of the political, military, social, religious, and cultural barriers that make it difficult to put protocols in place, both in emergencies and for long-term humanitarian situations.
Right.
So we're seeing this chaos that's rising and rising and rising worldwide, and nobody wants to, we don't want to face it, but inevitably we're going to have to face it.
Let me bring Rudy back into it. Rudy,
yes.
In Susie's book, she mentions a couple of times these conversations that she has with these beings about disclosure. And I know you monitor this stuff to some degree because of your association with FREE, the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. All the discussion about disclosure, we demand disclosure, the public says, and we're ready for it. I don't think the public is ready for it. I mean, I'd like to believe that we are, but I don't think the public is ready to fully accept the kinds of things that Susie's been told, or do you think I'm wrong?
I think you're absolutely right, George, and it's a great concern of mine. I believe that if disclosure were to happen abruptly, there would have to be winners and there would have to be losers. And you could imagine that the losers would not lose their status and their prestige and their positions easily, and so it's likely to become ugly. I feel as though there has to be disclosure ultimately, and I have a personal experience of how there will be some people who seem not to want this. Part of the spiritual message that we're getting is that you're probably going to have to get used to the idea that there is a creator, or what we in science have come to call a cosmic consciousness, because we want to get across the idea that it's harder and harder to understand the creation of our universe as a simple quantum accident. That has been the mission of science, but that's faltering now from the fact that there seem to have been too many coincidences. So it looks like we're going to have to become aware of a larger spiritual presence, and that means that maybe the theologians got it right. But when I talk to them about this, they seem to not really like the idea because it seems that the theological community is not happy of giving this conversation over to scientists. They want to be solely responsible for our souls. Otherwise, why would people give alms to a church?
Man, that's pretty tough to find something that both science and religion hates.
Right, George.
And I promised we'd go to the phones, but I have to ask one more question to Susie. You just kind of encapsulate this answer, but I mean, there is a connection. These beings are telling you there's a connection between all of us, that there is a cosmic connection. We all come from the same place. We're all the same thing, right?
Absolutely. Yes, what affects one affects all.
All right, we're going to take a couple of phone calls. Let's see. We'll go to first to the wild card line, Jay in Alabama. Hi, Jay.
Hello, great to talk to you. Your guest mentioned the beam of light and healing. Is that this? Did I get that right?
Susie?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Okay, well, I had been told that this technology was developed in Israel for the healing of the ligaments. They would take this beam of light instead of sewing them back together and for sports injuries. And they would take a beam of light that would fuse the bones back together. Where did that technology come from? I truly believe that this technology is supernatural and has been revealed to certain people. But anyway, on that one, I'll take the answer off the air. I'd like to hear what you have to say. Thanks for taking my call and beam me up, Scotty.
All right, and Susie, what year do you remember when you first saw this beam of light used in a medical application?
I've seen it in the 80s and in 90s.
So a long time ago.
Mm.
All right, Joe in Las Vegas on the wild card line. Hi, Joe, you're on with Susie and Rudy.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure.
First of all, I just got to say, before I get to my question, that I was baptized when I was a little kid. I went to Catholic school, and it says in the Bible that God created the earth. So therefore, he is an alien being because he's not from the earth, right? He created the earth, right? So I don't know how, why that should be conflict.
Yeah, I don't think it is a conflict. You're right. That's a good point.
Okay, now, my question for Susie. Did they tell you anything about an alien war between alien species that might be coming?
Hi there. No, I've never heard anything about an alien war between species, but I have heard about war between humans, and I have been warned that in the future, possibly not too far away, an enormous deception will be revealed. Now, I'm sure we could all think of a lot of conspiracy theories, deceptions that we know of, but this one will be so big it will be quite earth-shattering that a deception will be revealed where humans have harmed humans, and it will be a current thing that's happening today.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. We're going to Stacy in Oxbridge, Massachusetts. Hi, good morning. You're on Coast to Coast.
Good morning. I find you, Susie, very fascinating because I'm very inquisitive. So I want to ask you a few things real quick. So when you were young and you had these first experiences, and before you elected to be conceived to be a human body, when you got like disciplined by your parents if you misbehave, and say if you got put for time out, did the alien entities come and talk to you about what you've done?
George, could you just repeat the question for me?
I think she's asking if you did something wrong as a kid and you were in trouble with your parents, did they come and intervene in that kind of thing? And did they give you moral guidance as a youngster?
It's an interesting question because they didn't come and intervene, but I have been told that gave me guidance and tools to use I had quite a negative childhood in some ways, and they gave me some tools that is along the lines of the way that they would approach things and that they would consider things that I could use in those situations. And I do recall as a child often I would stand back and look at a situation that might be happening at home or in the community, and I would be quite analytical and very clear about it even as a very young child. And that's something that my teachers picked up on, was my ability to analyze a situation and cut right through to the core of something.
Thanks, Stacey. Appreciate it. You know, Susie, you had mentioned that it's genetic manipulation, multi-generational. They've been working on something, and it leads to your son, at least one of your children. Does he know?
That's right.
Does he know?
Yes, he does. Yes. He doesn't have conscious memory of being on a craft. He does have some minimal memories. But my book explains why that is, why this particular group of young adults now, why they don't have that conscious memory, but they will have in the future. It will start to rise up and come to their consciousness.
I mean, it's sort of like you. I mean, you couldn't remember all of it, and then it came back to you later as you got older.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, we'll try to go to east of the Rockies, Fred in Kansas. Hi, Fred.
Hi, how are you doing tonight, George?
All right, what's on your mind?
I was going to ask Susie. She explained that she was a school teacher and she was very analytical and analyzing situations. So she stated she'd been on many spaceships. I was just wondering if she could give some details of what the interiors might look like.
Sure,
like maybe
good question.
The texture and the colors.
Yeah, good question.
So the question was, what do the interiors of the craft look like?
Yeah, some details. We got about a minute before we go to break.
Okay, very bland and stark, mainly white, not a lot of color at all. The color is mainly associated with screens and imagery that you see, although they are able to telepathically create holograms in the air that are very colorful that you can see. But everything is very minimalistic on the craft. The beds and the chairs and everything are ergonomically shaped and designed so that they're made of very thin plastic, but when you sit on them, it's rather like memory foam. It's very comfortable. When you get up, it bounces back into shape again. There's a lot of stuff that's quite magical. A lot of it is hidden away in the walls, if I can put it that way. You can touch a wall and something will pop up. Something will become visible. But overall, very white, very clean, very sterile, very bland looking.
I'll tell you what, we're going to a break now. When we come back, I'll let you continue that question from Fred, because there was a section in your book, I remember, where you talk, it was like a dining hall, where everybody sat around a kind of a table and got food. And I thought that was a pretty interesting part of it. We have one segment remaining with Susie Hansen and Dr. Rudy Shield. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. The Beatles, I Should Have Known Better, from the transformational album A Hard Day's Night, 1964. And speaking of transformations, The Dual Soul Connection is the book we've been discussing tonight by Susie Hansen and Dr. Rudy Shield. And it does discuss things that are transformative, suggesting a cosmic connection between many of the topics that we discuss night after night on this program that are seemingly unrelated, that we're learning tonight might be directly related after all. We'll go back to the phones in our final segment right after this on Coast to Coast. Susie, of all the stories I have read, books I have read about the experiences of contactees, abductees, describing the interior of craft and their interaction with these beings, I've never heard any of them talk about aliens eating food until I read your book. And you had a little section in there continuing an answer to the question that came before the break about the interior of the craft. Can you talk about that?
When I was 12 years old, I was allowed into the area of craft where it was the Greys' living quarters. So I was taken from what I call a playroom or a recreation room where I interacted with other human children and ET children. And I'd expressed an interest in where they sleep and where they live. And so I was given the opportunity to go with one of the Greys into their private area, which is quite different from where humans are taken. Everything was much smaller, more minimal, quite sort of like stingy, really, I suppose, in a child's mind. I was taken to a room and shown what I call a virtual reality chair, which was a form of private entertainment, where they could watch, take themselves to a virtual place, select from a whole range of topics and be able to immerse themselves in another environment. And then I was taken on down the hall and taken to an area where they were preparing sustenance. And this was something like some fibrous kind of tissues, fibrous pieces of material that were put into a machine. And very quickly and rapidly out came these little rectangles or little strips that they could absorb. So they would put it on the skin or they could slip it into the mouth, although they no longer have the capacity to eat and chew in the way that they used to, apparently. And I was told that in the very distant future, provided we survive, of course, mankind would turn to food and sustenance like this and would absorb more food than actually ingesting food. So I was invited to pick up one of these and try to put it on my skin, but it was so delicate and tissue-like that it basically disintegrated because there's a lot more moisture on my skin than on theirs, apparently. So there were a number of entities sitting around the table preparing this. I was told they all take turns at these duties. Nobody is above anyone else. They all get to do these kinds of chores. And the interesting thing is that they all accepted me, my presence there. It was very loving, very quiet, and very peaceful. And I found it very difficult to drag myself away from them. And probably in all of my experiences, this one in particular, I felt this strong kinship with them. I felt that I was part of them and they were part of me. As to whether that was just my child's emotions or not, but it is certainly something that I have remembered for a very long time.
Makes you wonder. I mean, for them saying, you know, in the future we'll be like them, maybe they are us in the future. I mean, maybe that's where they come from.
Something that a lot of people have put forward that idea, yes.
Rudy, I want to ask you a question before we go back to the phones. It's about FREE. I had a chance to interact with some of the members of FREE, this organization that you're the executive director of, 6 or so weeks ago, and was really impressed. Is that the focus of what you're working on now, and what do you do for them, and how can people learn from FREE, and how can FREE benefit from the public?
FREE maintains a website which anyone can go to, because if they feel as though they have relevant experience with the kinds of phenomena Susie has been describing, they can answer questionnaires in which we gather statistical information. We have a statistical group led by Dr. John Climo, who is a professional psychiatrist, academic psychiatrist his entire life, and he knows how to do accurate statistical survey work. And so our survey has already been completed by over 1,700 experiencers. This is allowing us to gather up a really significant database to describe the nature of the experience. The kinds of conclusions we're coming to is, for example, that there's a great deal of commonness between the UFO abduction experience and the near-death experience, that the kinds of people who have one are kind of likely to have the other. And because of this, we're trying to look for other things which will help put us perspective on the nature of our extraterrestrial experiences.
Well, like I said, I was really impressed by them, and in the search for sort of a unified theory of weirdness, if you don't mind that term, we'll go back to the phone lines. Jason in Northridge on West of the Rockies line. Hi, Jason.
George, hey, Susie. Nice to talk to you guys. Listen, Susie, I had two questions for you. One, George has had a guest on named David Politis, who's written some books about strange disappearances throughout the state parks of the United States. And I'd like to know, what are the creatures that are abducting these people, and what are they doing with the humans that do not come back? That's my first question.
Well, in answer to that question, Jason, I don't have any knowledge of ETs that take people away and disappear and don't bring them back. That's not the kind of ETs that I've had contact with.
To take someone like you, what are they looking for? What quality do you have, and that some of these other people have, that they say, this is the person we need to abduct and we need to cultivate a relationship with versus anybody else?
Yeah, good question, Jason.
Okay. Well, this takes me back to the familial aspect I explained before, where they take four generations in a family, and they look at each of those people, they take them on board, they educate them, there may be genetic alterations. And you're looking for a range of things, not only to do with the brain and the mind, consciousness, a range of abilities, I guess. And if you fit the picture, then that's good. But at the same time, they're looking at it's people who have volunteered in a soul state to actually do this work. And there will always be some who fall by the wayside once they incarnate on the planet and don't ever get to do it. But then there will be those like myself and many others. Who pick up the challenge and actually do the work.
That's kind of what I was thinking. I wonder if it's like fishing. You catch one and you release it if it's not quite big enough or not quite right.
Yes, that's right. And I have actually seen evidence of this on the craft where there's been other children and with a parent, and they've been told, okay, we're going to keep this child as a sleeper, so we're going to actually contact them later in life because that's going to suit them better. So these programs that they're running are very complex and multi-leveled, and if you don't kind of no longer fit in a particular thing, or you're not going so well in a particular thing, there's no sense of failure. You're just moved somewhere else and you pick up something else to do.
Thanks for the question. First-time caller, Joseph in Sherman Oaks, California. Hi, Joseph. You're on with Rudy and Susie.
Yes, hi, Susie. Quick question. Earlier on the show, you have stated that the alien have explained to you, in detail, on certain items. Could you please give us an example on, what they said, what they explained in detail? And how do you communicate with them? I mean, obviously, they don't speak English, so how do you communicate with them? Thanks so much.
Thanks, Joseph. George, could you just repeat that again?
Well, the communication, I missed the first part of it. The answer to the second part of it, most of the communication was telepathic, is what she said. There was some verbalization by the visitors. I didn't understand the first part of the question, and I think Joseph is gone.
Okay.
Yep, sorry. Okay. Let's go to wildcard line. Tony in Northern California. Hi, Tony.
Well, good evening. This is Tony, and my theory is that we are not the original inhabitants of this planet, that we were brought here to settle it, and that it's done throughout the universe. If any Earth-like planet has participated in it, and then being a MUFON member, I've listened to various commentary on the greys and also the reptilians and also the insectoids that are out there.
Do you
Hi,
have a
Tony.
Question?
yes, I... excuse me. I've been taken to a room on the craft, which was where there were long tubes with fetuses in them of different kinds, where the greys were... engineering mixtures of species to be introduced to planets where there was early signs of life or further along the track in terms of life evolving. So yes, it's entirely possible that we've come from somewhere else or that we've been added to and mixed up in the pot along the way, and that we represent a number of species. That's entirely possible.
Thanks for the call, Tony. Steve in Rockport, New York. Hi, Steve.
How are
Hello.
You, Susan? Can you hear me?
Yes. What's on your mind?
Yes. I have had multiple contact. Very positive. They have helped me substantially. The last contact I had was August 16th back in 2011, and I haven't had contact since. It started when I was a kid. I believe it goes all the way back to my grandparents. My grandparents supposedly couldn't have children, and I believe that they helped her to enable her to have my mother. Okay. My thing is, now, I seen them for about 5 minutes on the last encounter. I don't know how to get in contact with them again, to volunteer my time to possibly do what you're doing with them. I would like to learn and to be able to help our race. Do you have any idea how I can possibly do that, get in contact to where I can get them to come back and communicate with me?
Hi, Steve. Well, thanks for your question. I think that everything unfolds. I'm a great one for believing that if we kind of try to push things too much, it goes awry. So if you're part of something and you've been contacted before, then I'm sure you're going to be contacted again, and your path will unfold before you. I'm very pleased to hear that your contacts have been positive.
Yeah, it's kind of a one-way thing, right, Susie? I mean, it's up to them to decide when they're going to come and visit.
Yes, I mean, you can put the thought out there, but basically, if you're part of a program that you've volunteered for and you've been working in, then when the need arises, they'll be contacting you.
I mean, have you been able to do that at a time in your life, and you've said, I wish they'd show up, and you consciously put it out there, and does it work?
I haven't done that, but there have been times when I've stated to other people who have been with me, we are going to see this. I've just been basically told we're going to see this. This is what's going to happen, and it has happened. And that includes the appearance of, you know, lights in formation going across the sky of around the city that I live in. So, I have precognition of when certain things are going to happen sometimes in terms of contact.
Seems kind of one-sided in a way. You know, they will let you know when something's going to happen. You get precognition. They decide when you're going to come on the ship. What you've described is a series of genetic manipulations. It's not like they've asked for permission, or maybe they have.
They did. That's what I talked about earlier.
You volunteer,
on, where I was
right.
Speaking before a council and made certain choices and was accepted. But I don't see it as one-sided because, hey, you know, I'm working every day in the UFO field here in New Zealand. So I'm doing my bit. I am working. And it's like, you know, it's like running a business, I guess. You know, you've got workers in one room and workers in another, and occasionally you have a meeting to sort out what you're going to do next.
And is it a two-sided conversation, though? Is it two-sided? I mean, do you give them reports when you interact with them? Can you tell them, hey, this is what's been going on with me, or they already know, just telepathically?
Oh, well, they already know, and I describe this in the book as when I've been coming on a craft, I have felt them, if I can put it that way, felt them telepathically accessing my mind, and by the time I get to the room, they already know everything that they need to know, and then the discussion takes place. So it's not a matter of having to give a report. You know, the consciousness has already enabled them to access the information that they require.
Well, I hope you'll pass along, or they'll already know that you were on this program, and we're here to help. I don't know. I don't think they use email, but you're welcome to give them my email and phone number if you want to, and I'd love to have a chat with them.
Okay.
Let's take one more call. Cole in Salt Lake City. Hi, Cole. Hey, good morning. You're on Coast to Coast. What's on your mind?
Hey, yeah, I had a really quick objection story and then a really quick question. Back a couple years ago when I was in jail, and I actually, 2 days before I had the abduction, the two roommates in the cell next to me, they were banging and screaming on their doors saying they got abducted. And I thought it was really weird. They just put the cameras on the guys, and they just were watching them. But the next night, I was actually abducted in the ship, and they were in the ship with me. And it was kind of like on Contact with Jodie Foster, how the ship was like see-through, you know, like luminous. It was like that when they were transporting me. And then it was a really, really vivid experience. But at one point, there was this like slug that led me to a triangle prison of light. I looked through it, and I seen three different realities of my existence happening all at once. And I was.
Did you say a slug? Did you say a slug?
Yeah, like a big caterpillar led me to a triangle prison of light, and it showed me three different dimensions of my reality. And then I actually woke up with a jolt, and there I was laying on like a gurney, and I reached up and I grabbed the neck of a gray, and before I even was awake, I saw the presence right next to me, and I had my hand all the way around his neck, and I dropped him. And then the gray broke my rib and put it back together. I guess it was kind of a joke. Like, you know, I picked him up and then put him down, and then he broke my rib and put it back together. And since this day, my rib has been, broken in that area.
Hey, but Cole, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. We're going to have to cut you off. We're out of time. Appreciate that story, and I encourage you to get a hold of Susie and share your question with her. We have contact information on the website. I wanted to ask Rudy one more question before we go, and that is this sort of the same lines of what I was getting at, is that have you asked her, hey, put in a good word with the aliens because I'd like to talk to them myself? You had to.
No, I actually haven't, because I understand that the universe will do that under its own terms, and I don't have to ask. Thank you.
That's the way it works. So that's the way it works. Oh, darn it. You have to be patient with this stuff. Susie, your contacts are ongoing. I mean, do you have a sense of when they're coming and how often it happens? And
yes, they're ongoing, but we're moving into a different phase at the moment, if I can put it that way, on the planet, and I think we all feel that with what's happening. It's kind of an escalation of things happening. And in the same sense, I feel as if I've moved into a new phase. I'm probably going to have fewer contacts at the moment because of the work that I'm doing.
I hope you'll come back and talk to us again. It was a fascinating discussion. Thank you, Susie, and thank you, Dr. Rudy Shield. The Dual Soul Connection is the name of the book. Check it out. It's really good. I enjoyed it very much. Thanks also to our earlier guest, Travis Langley, and to the crew that worked on the show with me tonight, my colleagues there at Premier, Jeff DeRay, Gina Salvati, Dan Galati, our webmaster, Tim Binal, and Chris Boros. I'll be back next Sunday. Good night, everyone.